This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't think I'm coming in tomorrow unless there's a problem. There was a little problem last week. We had made a change. And we don't usually like to make changes this time of the year. But, you know, sometimes it's like, we need this. Okay. So we put in this little change. And everything seemed to be working during the day. We were good. Everything's good. We're good. Then in the overnight process, something that should have taken only about an hour to run ballooned out to like 10 hours. Oops. And then it was slow as well for the data entry people. And so I ran in and worked with the guy that I had worked with, and we got the changes made, figured out what was going on, and, you know, got that taken care of, and so I did actually go in last Friday for a little bit, but it wasn't too bad. It is episode 298. We're going to be at 300 here pretty quickly, which is a bit ridiculous. So anyways, let's see. Okay. I just got a text from my wife, so she was just letting me know that she has the mail. So her text read, "I know has cheeseburger, but I do has the mail." So there you go. I love my wife. She's fun. She just really is. You know. For all there is in human relationships, for all that the trouble that you can make, if you stick with it and you keep yourself dedicated and you stay married and you try to learn from each other, and you try to be kind and compassionate with each other, things just keep getting better. There's a real benefit to kindness and compassion and love and mercy and gentleness. All those things, man, it works out good. Good. It works out good. Anyway, so that's going good. The book is still going long. Urgh. I am closing in 108,000 words. The last book was like 115,000 words, and I still have several chapters to write. Oh, I'm afeared at this point that this book is not going to be ready for beta until March 1st. Because it won't surprise me if this goes to 125 by the time it's like, quit talking. So, you know, it is what it is. Books are what they are. They take on a life of their own. And there, you just gotta kind of go with what you got. So when I go back through and edit it, I might decide that there's some superfluous stuff in there, but, you know, probably not. It's really amazing to me that you can start with a blank page and start telling a story, and then the story just unfolds in front of you. And I feel like I try to be true to my characters. I try to understand what they're going through and relate that. And, you know, all those things take time when you do that. But it's amazing how, it's just amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing, this writing thing. I love this writing thing. And it's nice to have people who are actually interested in what you're writing. They had a Christmas lunch for the programmers and the former programmers, and a birthday lunch and all combined type thing. And so some of the former programmers were in, and one of the guys is actually one of my beta readers. First thing he said when he saw me, he walked in, he said, "So I hear I'm going to be having another book pretty soon." And I said, "Yeah, I'm working on it, buddy. I'm working on it. It's supposed to be out February 1st, but..." It might go a little long. So it's okay, though. It's okay. The book is fun. It's fun and hopefully exciting. And I just have to nail the epilogue. Although there again, that's an interesting thing too, because I kind of had this idea, and then as I've been getting closer to it, it's like, oh yeah, I could do that. Oh yeah, I could do that. And yeah, this may be really be about that. And it's like you as you go along, you get more light on the path, and all of a sudden you realize there's more things going on here than you thought were going on there. And so then you can, so yeah, it's fun. That's going good. I was trying to think if I even got together with any friends this week. I mean, got together with our kids, of course, and they're our friends. But I think that was about it. Next week, I know for sure I'll have a breakfast on Thursday. Might have a breakfast on Tuesday. And then we're off from work the next week. So, you know, that's always fun. So I'll be probably doing some writing that week. Trying to get closer to get this thing finished. So, anyways, all is good. All is good. All is good. Well, I came across an article that really isn't telling me anything new, but I thought it was an interesting viewpoint and a valuable viewpoint, and it's good for us to keep these things in mind. It's written by the guy that I talked about several podcasts ago. It's the guy who wrote the book Jesus Zealot. No, it's called Zealot, The Life and Times of Jesus of Nazareth. And I had a friend who was reading some of it, and he said he enjoyed some of it, and some of it, you know, not so much. But basically, this guy's approach was that Jesus shouldn't be taken out of the context of history of all the other zealots that were around. He was just another zealot, and, you know, for some reason he made it big. His disciples kind of invented new things about him or something, and it turned it in. But he's basically just the same type of thing as has always been and ever was. Okay, well, that's fine. Everybody gets their own opinion. That's fine. This guy is, you know, he calls himself a scholar of religions. And somewhere I think I read that he teaches in a university or something. And so he has an interesting viewpoint when it comes to religions. But he wrote this article called Sam Harris and the New Atheist Aren't New, and They Aren't Even Atheists. So I thought, oh, well, there you go. In case you aren't familiar with the term new atheists, the new atheists are the atheists that are extremely outspoken about atheism. They're almost militant. Well, many are militant. And they take a very hard line when it comes to religion in general. That they feel like they should just rid the world of religion, and then everything would be fine. Good luck with that. Because it ain't gonna happen. You could try, as the communists did, to purge all religion from your society, and it's just gonna grow up in the corners and in the cracks and in the shadows. You're not gonna be able to do it. And after belief and faith spawns out and starts growing in the cracks and the corners and the shadows, the next thing that's happened is somebody's going to try to get it organized, and you're going to have organized religion all over again. That's the way it's going to be. It has to do with the construct of the human psyche. Ta-da! Anyways, so this article is about him exploring these people who call themselves the new atheists. And he said from his perspective, these so-called new atheists like Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins give atheism a bad name. Now, obviously, he said that in an interview, and the internet exploded. Because that's what the internet does. You know, the internet is not a place for reasoned discussion. You basically say something, and the internet explodes. And so the internet exploded. And he said one of the things that surprised him about some of the comments was that in criticizing the new atheism, he was by default criticizing atheism itself, as if the two are the same, which he said, of course, they're not. He says, this seems to be an increasingly common mistake these days with the media and bestseller lists dominated by new atheist voices denouncing religion as innately backwards, obscurantist, irrational, and dangerous, and condemning those who disagree as religious apologists. Okay, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what's interesting is that the author of the article, he says, you know, really nothing should be immune from criticism. He says, but when Richard Dawkins describes religion as one of the world's greatest evils comparable to smallpox, or when Sam Harris proudly declares, if I could wave a magic wand and get rid of either rape or religion, I would not hesitate to get rid of religion. It should be perfectly obvious to all that these men do not speak for the majority of atheists. On the contrary, polls show that only a small fraction of atheists in the U.S. share such an extreme opposition to religious faith. And he goes on to say, which is absolutely true, that what Harris and Dawkins are actually preaching is a polemic that should be termed anti-theism. It's not atheism, it's anti-theism. They are fastidiously opposed, virulently opposed to the idea of God and religion. It's not just they're saying God may or may not exist. He goes on in the article to draw some kind of interesting parallels with the fact that atheism has existed for a long, 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 long time. But anti-theism is actually somewhat new, and was given rise, he feels, really in the period of the Enlightenment. That during the period of enlightenment, you had science making its progression. Now people have a new way to relate to the world because science can relate to the world and they don't feel like they need God anymore. And so it's not just enough anymore to say there may or may not be a God. Now what we have to do is we have to launch an assault on anybody else who actually believes in God. Which, you know, is an interesting reaction. So you come out of the Enlightenment, and now you have people who have found something they can hook their wagon to. And so they've decided that they're not only going to hook their wagon to it, they're going to oppose all other religious thought because it's closed-minded, because it doesn't allow for any other opinions, because it's dogmatic, and it won't actually consider other possibilities. What's interesting about this is he said it was around the time, by the middle of the 19th century, that this movement got its own name, anti-theism, specifically to differentiate it from atheism. And it was also around this time that the writings of German philosopher Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, Marx famously viewed religion as the opium of the people and sought to eradicate it from society. He wrote, "The abolition of religion as the illusory happiness of the people is the demand for their real happiness." Oh, the abolition of religion as the illusory happiness of the people is the demand for real happiness. So in other words, he's saying people aren't ever going to really be happy until you just completely get rid of religion. You just got to purge your entire society from it. Now, you may be familiar with the name Karl Marx because his writings inspired communism. And in fact, we have had a couple of Marxist entities that have given this a shot. In truth, Marx's views on religion and atheism, this is the author again, were far more complex than these much abused sound bites. Nevertheless, Marx's vision of a religionless society was spectacularly realized with the establishments of the Soviet Union and the People's Republic of China. Two nations that actively promoted state atheism by violently suppressing religious expression and persecuting faith communities. Atheists often respond that atheism should not be held responsible for the actions of these authoritarian regimes, and they are absolutely right. Author's still writing here. It wasn't atheism that motivated Stalin or Mao to demolish or expropriate houses of worship, to slaughter tens of thousands of priests, nuns, and monks, and to prohibit the publication or dissemination of religious material. It was anti-theism that motivated them to do so. After all, if you believe that religion is like smallpox, or the world would be much, much better if you just got rid of religion, well, you give that type of person who believes that any kind of power, and guess what's going to happen? There's going to be soldiers in the street. And as the author of this article says, if you honestly believe that about religion, then what lengths would you not go through to rid society of it? He goes on to say that the horrors of the First and Second World Wars not only punctured the promises of secular nationalism in the West, it led to a religious revival, particularly in the United States. In the 1970s, the rise of Islamic terror abroad and the insertion of Christian fundamentalism into American politics disabused most thinkers of the notion that religion was about to fade from modern society. Because you can try to stamp out religion. You can try to stamp out religion actually by being just about as ugly as you want. You can take over houses of worship. You can slaughter priests and nuns and preachers. You can make it a punishable offense even by death to hand out literature. But guess what? For all of that in China, one of the big, huge events that I remember being overseas in the 70s was when China started opening back up, and the huge questions everyone was asking was, from missions perspective, how many Christians have survived inside China? And the first missions people who made it in there and made it out, they started running estimates, and everybody was stunned at the vibrant church that there was in China, even with all the terrible oppression. And there's reason for that. And the reason is that it has a life that is fueled outside of this earthly realm. And so you can do anything you want to it physically. It's not going to go away. And just about the time you think you got it stamped out in one spot, it'll pop up someplace else. So, religion is certainly not going away. Now, the problem is, this is pretty frustrating to some atheists. Some atheists who really, really, are anti-theists, or and they just don't call themselves that yet, who really, really, really want something done about religion, they keep seeing religion on the rise. Okay, so what is their recourse then? Their recourse is to come up with an atheism that is much more dogmatic, you know, that's much more muscular in terms of its responsive things, but then it's really not atheism anymore. Now what you've done is you've moved into anti-theism. And what's really interesting is that the anti-theists themselves will associate religion with fundamentalism and zealotry and closed-mindedness and everything. But in making this bridge over to anti-theism, the anti-theists then begin exhibiting traits exactly the same. That if you don't agree with them, well, obviously, you're an idiot. So the very thing that they dislike in religion, the closed-mindedness, that's right, my wife got the mail. She told me she got the mail, and I didn't need to do that. I just wasn't thinking because I was talking. The very thing that the anti-theists shake their fist about, the reasons, look at all the horrible things it's done in the world, look at all the suffering it's caused in the world, look at all the bigotry and all that, all those things that the anti-theists make accusation about with religion is the very same things they manifest. Isn't this interesting? I'm backing into my garage one moment. Whereas if you go back to a whole lot of the atheists, and this really is the point that I wanted to make here, and that is that if you go back and you really talk to people who are honest atheists, what you'll find is people who will say, okay, I don't see anything that convinces me that there is a God. I have no need to believe in a God. I choose not to believe in a God. But if you want to believe in a God, that's fine. That's the true atheistic position. I think a more honest position is agnosticism, where people say, you know, it's impossible to prove a negative. I, as a small speck of dust on a, you know, unrenowned planet circling a mediocre star slung off, as Douglas Adams said, on the unfashionable west end of the Milky Way galaxy, one galaxy among 100 billion galaxy, who am I to say whether there is a God or not? I think that's really the honest position. I just don't know, and I do not believe that resolving that question has any impact on my life. Okay, hope that works out for you. The true atheist, though, which the majority of people who proclaim themselves to be atheists are more in this true atheist camp, they're not going around trumpeting the fact that religion should be wiped off the planet and everyone who believes in it is an idiot. It's the new atheists who are doing this, who aren't atheists at all, who are in fact anti-theists, and they do, in fact, express the exact same type of religious zealotry and closed-mindedness and bigotry as the very religions that they criticize, which is all very interesting. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.